Welcome to the Fourth Age, a Wheel of Time podcast, brought to you by DragonMount.com.
The Wheel of Time is an epic fantasy series that is written by Robert Jordan.
Currently, there are 11 main books in the series and one prequel novel.
Robert Jordan is working on the final book, currently titled A Memory of Light.
And the Fourth Age podcast is dedicated to that series.
To contact us, please visit our website at www.dragonmount.com/podcast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 30 of the Fourth Age podcast. In today's episode, we'll be discussing Tom Marilyn. We have some fan feedback about Ran, Matt, and Perrin's special abilities, and also feedback about the last battle. Jason and Ben have been temporarily drafted into Helen Luca's traveling show of Magnificent Wonders, and they won't be with us tonight, but we do have Andrew to bring us some Wheel of Time news.
Thanks, Gary. We'll be updating everyone on some of the latest news from the Wheel of Time and DragonMount.com, but first we'll be continuing with our ongoing educational segment, What Were They Like in the Age of Legends? This, as always, is What You Should Know. Balthamel, one of the first Forsaken a reader meets in the physical world. Many have wondered what he was like in the Age of Legends. White Tower researchers have recently uncovered a stasis box that appears to contain documents of the famed Institute of Higher Learning at Majin. Among the papers were discovered a report on Aval Rahman, shortly after his turn to the Shadow. It turns out that the scholar of extinct civilizations was also a scholar of the opposite sex. In fact, the report contains several complaints from female students who claim that Professor Rahman would offer special, quote-unquote, extra credit assignments to particularly attractive young ladies that always seemed to involve meeting with him, both alone and with other female students, for drinks in the most sundry of places, said one such pupil. It wasn't like Professor Rahman was bad-looking or anything, but the way he would talk to you or look at you would just made you feel like you needed to bathe sometimes. If there is any justice in the world, he'd be locked up until he withers up and his tongue falls out. More shocking, though, is this excerpt from a personal journal found near a large tree miraculously untouched by the blight in the Third Age. Many have surmised that Balthamel joined the ranks of the Dark One only for the prospect of living forever. This journal, should it be authenticated, seems to confirm this theory, though it does expand on the matter a bit. It reads, "Well, I'm finally free from the boar, and I can say that I couldn't be more disappointed. I had the perfect plan. Step 1, collect an impressive harem and have them converted to the Shadow. Step 2, run information network of sexy double agents that help win the war. Step 3, watch humanity die. Step 4, publish the greatest research manuscript in history based on experiencing the extinction of human society. Step 5, rebuild the human race with harem. So simple, and now it's all ruined. I can't talk, and my face barely even exists anymore. I have to start all over on my research and make an appointment with Semirog to get my good looks back. I swear if I run into the dragon in this age, the natural world itself is going to have to rise up against me to keep me from killing him." These two accounts of Balthamel just go to show that irony can strike when you least expect it. Other than that, it's been a slow week in Wheel of Time news, so we'll head to the fan feedback with Gary.
This racket!
It's a spoiler warning, my lord! Robert Jordan's Wheel of Time is an epic fantasy series that is vast and quite large, and there may be listeners that have not yet completed the series.
Are you saying that I have...
Of course not! My lord is wise and all-knowing. But if there were people listening that have not yet finished the Wheel of Time series, they would be advised to stop now or risk the chance of spoiling parts of the series they have not read.
Ah, I see. Well, I do remember I have a bit of business to take care of on the other side of...
Of course! My lord will do as he must. I will stand guard.
Welcome to Carrie's Fan Feedback of the Week. This voicemail comes from Jacob from California.
This is Jacob calling from California. As far as Tuon, I'm with, what I remember I'm just now rereading the novels after a bit of a hiatus. I believe her title was, she's the daughter of the Nine Moons. That's from even, I believe, book two, with the Forerunners, when they're talking about, you know, the Empress's favor still rests with, you know, the daughter of the Nine Moons, her eldest. And then I had one other thing as far as Matt's luck, and then theory that it didn't begin until after he blew the horn in the Great Hunt, and Saldala, Dara. Matt does make a comment about how he was winning at dice already. And then, again, he tells Laurel how poor of a dice player he is, and that, you know, Matt likes him because Matt will almost always win against him. Then in The Dragon Reborn, when Matt first awakens in Tarvalen, he finds, you know, he looks for his dice cups, and then he also finds his money pouch and his coins, which are not a lot. He's already at that point where he knows that by playing dice, he can make enough money to live on. He just needs to find a merchant or some guards and play, and he would already, that he would win. So his luck is, I would say, probably started same time, you know, somewhere between time of Perrin's eye change and Rand's first channeling. Most of their abilities all seem to coincide to surface at about the same time. But yeah, that's my kind of counterclaim or counterargument to Ben's crazy theory. Okay, thank you. And I'm actually just now getting caught up on the podcast, listening to them on the road as I drive. So, but I'd let you guys know. Thanks. Bye.
Thanks, Jacob. That's definitely interesting.
I really kind of like the point he makes that Tuon is the daughter of the Nine Moons. It is an important distinction because the prophecies of the dragon don't say that Rand will bind the daughter of the Nine Moons to him. It says that he'll bind the Nine Moons to him. Meaning the court that Tuon represents as the imperial heir to the throne. So I definitely really like that distinction was made. It was definitely a good catch on Jacob's part.
Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely. And it's also kind of neat, especially considering how many times I've read it and the books and never really thought of it the way he did with how all the trio, how all of their, you know, talents and superpowers, if you could say, kind of came into effect at the same time. It's definitely interesting when you think about it that way, and I think when I go over and read the books again, I'm going to try and go through the timeline and see, because that's kind of interesting to note.
Yeah, I definitely think that everyone's Taverin qualities seem to have kind of developed really in lockstep with each other, mm-hmm. and I definitely would kind of agree that, once again, it does kind of provide a little more evidence to shoot Ben down. I know he firmly sticks to that very first crazy theory of his, but more the time, people just keep giving us evidence that seems to contradict, you know, what
he
says.
We found lots of evidence on that one, but he's not here to defend himself, so. But we have found quite a bit of evidence against that theory, but maybe we'll get into a debate over it sometime when we're all here and we can have a discussion about it.
Yeah.
Okay, we also have an email here from Nick. It reads, "Hey guys, I'm a new convert to the podcast, but I love it nonetheless. My question is that in Lord of Chaos, when Rand goes to meet Fel, he informs him of his theory that the last battle might really not be the last battle. What are your thoughts on this? I can't remember which chapter it's in because I'm in college right now and I don't have my books with me. Thanks for your time, Nick Gibson, Belleville, Michigan. P.S. May the light shine and protect you. Thanks, Nick. Actually, that's kind of cool because that's one thing that's... I guess it's easy to think of the Wheel of Time because obviously we've heard in every single book exactly what the wheel is. Basically, that's completely true. It depends on how you look at it. The way that time works in the Wheel of Time is that it's a wheel and everything that happens is eventually going to come again. So we've heard this over and over again. The wheel was created by the creator. He actually shaped the wheel. He also created the one power that drives the wheel. And that's the plan for the great pattern, right? Or he made the plan for the great pattern. So the creator did all that. He created all the worlds and all the variations of all the worlds that they go to when they're in the, when they go through the portal stones. The thing is that basically what the Dark One wants to do, he's always bound. The creator bound him from the beginning of when he created time. He bound the Dark One at the same time, if I remember correctly. So the Dark One actually wants to break free from his prison, but completely free, not just touch the world. He literally wants to break free. And if he can break free completely, he will then have the power to break the wheel. And of course, if he breaks the wheel, then he will be able to remake the world in his own image. So then that would result in the end of the world the way that it is now, so it would not happen again. So basically, if the Dark One wins, then that actually could be the last battle, because it'll break the wheel so it won't happen again. But if it is actually the way that it should be and the Light wins, then everything will go on to happen again, and it will not be the last battle. It will happen over and over and over again. Does that make sense to you?
Well, one of the interesting things that Fel mentions, and it's not just Herod Fel, it's also, interestingly enough, Ishmael that mentions this, is the idea that it's possible that not only is this last battle not really the last battle, but that the last battle itself has been fought on numerous occasions, that they've gone through this same, you know, turning of the wheel over and over, and that, you know, in every instance, the Dark One is trying to, you know, smash the wheel and keep things from resetting the way they were. But that kind of goes on to the idea that what exactly then would happen in the last battle, because the Dark One has to be completely resealed so that people don't even know he exists anymore. So does the Creator, you know, come in and take a hand? Does the last battle happen and then the Creator goes, okay, time to hit the reset button? It's an interesting thing, and a number of people have kind of chimed in on this. Like I said, the two principal ones have been Fel and Ishi. And it's kind of interesting because Ishmael has, you know, kind of at times seem to step outside the pattern, and how you can possibly do that without being more insane than he already is, I don't know. But Fel seemed to also kind of be working on that, and then at the same time was working on Rand as to, you know, the nature of the seals on the Dark One's prison and whatnot. And that's pretty much the last we hear of him.
I don't think that the Creator will step in, because the more I think about it, I'm pretty sure that what we spoke about earlier in an earlier podcast about where the voice came down into Rand and said, I will take no part in this. I'm pretty sure that was Creator, and I think that he's just leaving it up to free will of, and, you know, the Dragon Reborn is his vassal, if you will, and he will fight on his behalf, on behalf of the Light, and so that's his way of kind of taking part, just to make sure that, you know, the wheel works properly and he's born and everything comes to be. But basically the rest, I don't think he'll, I don't know, if the Dark One was winning, I don't think he's just going to reach his hand and say, nope, that can't happen, we gotta put you back in.
Yeah, you know? I think Fel has some really interesting ideas about how it works, and I actually think he probably comes closer to anyone else, or closer than anyone else in the Third Age to actually understanding how the Wheel of Time actually functions. So, I definitely think it's an interesting... Yeah.
It can kind of hurt your head a little bit if you think about it too much.
Yeah, it does sort of. It's one of those A leads to B leads to C leads to A kind of weird little paradox things that the more you think about it, the more confused you become about what you want to say about it. And
exactly.
You know, which is probably why Fel kept, you know, forgetting things, you know, and it took... Mm-hmm. It took, you know, like a pretty girl like Min in order to kind of jar him out of his usual routine of, you know, forgetting that he's not lighting his pipe or something. Just
yeah.
Definitely a wonderful character, Herod Fel.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Well, thanks, Nick, for sending that in. That's definitely, it's an interesting little discussion that we can get going from that. So. Sure.
Okay, so this episode we are discussing Tom Merlin. He is tall but stooped, with white hair and long white mustaches and piercing blue eyes. Most of the information that we have comes by and large from www.encyclopediawatt.org. Tom was house bard for House Trakand before Morghais became queen of Andor. He was her strongest supporter during the succession for the throne. He later became court bard in the royal palace. He uncovered Tarangale de Modred's plot against Morghais and had him assassinated, or at least it's very strongly implied that that's what he did. After Tarangale's death, Tom and Morghais engaged in a sort of illicit love affair. Tom later left the royal palace to help his nephew Owen, who was having trouble with Sisters of the Red Hodge. But he was too late to help him, and ultimately, when he returned to Camelin, he was in a rather foul mood and ended up shouting at Morghais, for which she exiled him on pain of death, actually. We later meet him in the Two Rivers as Tom Merlin the Gleeman.
They call him the Gray Fox. So why is that, that they give him that nickname, well, Gray Fox?
One thing I'm thinking, and it's always caught me, Tom was always really, really adept at the game of houses. I mean, almost, you know, on the level of a Kyrohinian. He seemed really adept at the maneuverings that you need in that kind of subterfuge, undercurrenty world of the great game of houses. And I kind of see him as being like this weird spy master. I mean, because all of the spy masters that we ever meet in the series tend to be, they tend to be people who don't look like they'd be spy masters.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of think Tom just fits that bill really quickly in that, and I could see him being so adept at something of that nature that they would give him, you know, a name, you know, and so he obviously has this, you know, this grayish white hair and whatnot, and I kind of think that they probably, you know, just said, well, you know, he's really sly and tricky like a fox. Mm-hmm. And so we'll call him the Gray Fox because he disappears like smoke or something, and be really interesting.
Totally. They definitely don't expect it from him, like, just by looking when you're introduced to him as a character. And then, he's definitely a sneaky little bugger.
I also, and it's just it's another little thing, I'm not sure, and this is my own little interpretation. Tom seems like a really influential guiding force. He seems to know a lot more than you would expect him to know. His last name, Merlin, is really close to Merlin out of the Arthurian legends. And, you know, by calling him the Gray Fox, that kind of gives him a tentative connection to, you know, Gandalf the Grey. You know, once again, another person who kind of looks older but is far more knowledgeable than they probably appear at first. Maybe I'm blowing smoke here. I don't know. I look for literary connections all over the place, and, you know, I might be on key here and I might not, but, yeah, you know, it's something else that kind of seems to have multiple ties for this character and the type of character he is, ultimately.
Yeah, that's true. I agree. I know there's quite a few people out there that have this theory that he is Gawain and Elaine's father, you know, that they're his children, as opposed to Tarengal. But we thought we would bring that up, because from what we can find out, it's not true.
Yeah, I know when I first read the series, I kind of maybe thought that way a little bit. But, you know, by, I don't know, they never really do anything, you know, nothing is ever really done between, like, Elaine and Tom that confirms it and whatnot, so, you know, I guess I ultimately kind of discounted it after, you know, after a while, and that Tom has just always been around, you know, the young, you know, children of Morghais, and therefore kind of acts as a second father figure because mm-hmm. Tarengal died.
Yeah. I always thought of him that way. I never actually thought that he was actually their father. One thing... Well, it says right in the books, like in the glossary, that Tarengal is their father. Like, that he is the father of Elaine and Gawain.
True, yeah.
I mean, that would be a lie, you know?
Yeah, I really doubt Mr. Jordan would, you know, purposefully feed us completely false information, you know, in the glossaries or something like that. I think it would be,
If that were true, he'd find another way, being as creative as he is, of wording it where you can't, you know, kind of like how Aes Sedai, they tell the truth, but it, you know, it means something else of what you think it means. So I'm sure that he could put a spin on it and word it differently if, you know, he wanted to kind of make it so it looked like he was saying that but didn't necessarily say it.
Yeah.
But I know that Robert Jordan himself, I guess, also had said that at a Crown of Swords signing, this was in Georgia, in 1996, and he strongly denied that Tom was Elaine and Gawain's father, and he says Tom is exactly who he says he is. So right there, kind of...
That's definitely something interesting. I always love it when we hear direct confirmation or denial from mm-hmm. from Robert Jordan, because it kind of makes one of those things that at that point you can say, okay, he said the exact words, and... You know, there's no point in him lying to us, so there you mm-hmm. go.
Yeah. He says Tom is exactly who he says he is. Has Tom ever stated that he didn't have children?
He's never directly stated he didn't have children.
I don't think he has either.
But at the same time...
We know he doesn't, or we think.
Yeah, he's always... Tom's usual line is, I'm just a gleeman.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, honestly, He's never claimed to be a father. He's never, So, you know, I honestly think we kind of have that locked down. I think, you know, Robert Jordan has definitely said that, nope, as much as it may seem that, you know, Elaine and Gawain could be his kids, probably not, no.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, I think the timing there would be a little wrong, because we know... Gawain and Elaine were born before Tarengal died, and in that case, Morghais would have had mm-hmm. to have been having an affair with Tom while she was married to Tarengal, and that would just muck up the
yeah.
already murky royal family of Andor even further, I think.
Yeah, totally, yeah. It's not true, so...
But considering, you know, since we're talking about, Tom and his various relations with the ladies, a lot of interesting stuff has been said across the series concerning Tom and Moraine. What do you think about that?
You know, it's kind of weird because at first time reading through, even the first couple times, I never thought there was anything more to them than I don't know. But yet at the same time, when you kind of put everything together with, obviously Tom's going to be there to rescue Moraine with Matt, which you knew that previously because of, wasn't it Egwene's dream, where she had the dream of him pulling Moraine's stone out of the fire, I think it was. But I never really thought of anything relationship-wise between them, because I don't remember seeing any, like, sparkage or anything, but, I don't know, it seems to be implied now.
Yeah, so, I mean,
I know he has a tremendous amount of respect for her, you know, even though she's Aes Sedai, and I'm sure, he could get past that, and she, obviously the same for him, she knows he's more than okay, I know he says he's just a Gleeman, and that's what Robert Jordan says he is, but she knows more than that, that he is the Grey Fox. She knows exactly who he is. Yeah.
Well, and there was that scene in the Stone of Tyr where it was weird because they were talking about how much they know about each other, and it was kind of hard to pick out what they were really saying to each other because you kind of get that impression that they were, like, in uber Game of Houses mode at the same time. And, how to really state it. There's that, and then there's I remember from, the most recent book, Knife of Dreams, when Matt finally reads the letter that Moraine sends to Tom, it begins, my dearest Tom, and, Matt kind of does this weird double take and looks at it like, whoa, that's a really warm greeting for, these people that I didn't really think were in any way, shape, or form connected. And it was just odd things like that it's hard to pick out. And a lot of people seem to think that the two are going to hook up, and I don't know. I think it would be weird if they did, but at the same time, I can't say I'd be surprised.
Well, you know what I think of is back when Moraine was talking to, I think she was talking to Egwene and Nynaeve, I think, and she was and she said, "I bet I know the face of the man that I'm going to marry more than you," or
yeah.
I can't remember the exact quote.
I think
quote.
It was down in the Stone
and
of Tyr.
I always was, but that was, she said that before she went through the Tarangrel doorway.
There is a thought with that. If I remember properly, in New Spring, we see Moraine's test for the Shawl of the Aes Sedai. So we see her go through one Tarangrel. However, we do not see her test for Accepted, and it's never talked about what in the variation of the future that all women who go through that Tarangrel to become Accepted see. We don't necessarily know what Moraine actually saw there, and so she may, Nynaeve, when Nynaeve went through the Tarangrel and saw that she would, be married to Lon. Maybe Moraine actually saw Tom in the Tarangrel. We have no idea, because it's one of those tantalizing little, well, what actually did happen then kind of scenarios.
Mm-hmm. Well, I thought of that it could be that, but a lot of those visions that they show you of what your future could be don't seem to be something, I mean, they're a possibility of what could exist, but they don't seem to be something that is likely to exist.
Yeah, I mean,
who they are, So, I don't know, she seemed, positive that she knew the man's face that she, who she was going to marry.
I don't know.
And then afterwards, I know she said something like, I'm just saying, you know, she kind of like dismissed it after she said it. But when she said it, it seemed like she was pretty positive.
Yeah, and her dismissal seems really Aes Sedai dismissal. Well, perhaps what I meant to say was this. And you don't know because I'm Aes Sedai and you know I can't lie. Ha ha ha.
Yeah.
Not to put words into Moraine's mouth, but you know.
I don't know why I'd think that it would be Tom, but there just does seem to be a connection. And I think that if, even though I haven't seen anything to me that jumps out as romantic, it does seem like, I don't know, they could make a very good match together because of they're both kind of similar in that, with, like you said, like the Game of Houses, like the way they were talking to each other, and they just, they're both kind of sneaky and sly, and although they're good guys, you know, it's not that they're bad, but they would complement each other well, I think. I don't know. It's kind of interesting because I don't know if I could see it, but at the same time I see it, but it would be kind of weird all of a sudden if they actually ever showed anything happen.
Do you think there's a the tension between them that we have seen is kind of the impetus for Tom going in to rescue her with Matt and Noel from the Elfin and the Eelfin?
Maybe.
Because I know the letter is really... The letter Moraine sends him really puts him in, like, this weird agonizing kind of brooding. And he constantly reads and rereads this letter from her to make sure he knows what it says. And, like, it seems like he's trying to absorb every nuance he can out of it. Because when he finally shows the letter to Matt, it's, you know, the letter's been folded and refolded so many times that it's almost on the verge of, like, falling apart, I is the way I envision it. And, you know, it that seems like a man who is really, really invested in what he's concerned with. And,
Yeah. Well, that's true. Did they show him read it alone very often? Because I thought a lot of the time when it was mentioned that he was reading it was in front of Matt. I thought he was doing it to get his attention.
That is possible. It's definitely like,
come on, ask me about my letter, you know?
I could see that.
Because Matt has said before, oh, he's got that letter, you know, or whatever. Or he's in his mind, like in his point of view. I know he's thought it, like, there's Tom reading that letter or whatever, but he thought it was personal, so he didn't want
to. Well, I could see it being a very Tom thing to do, is to constantly make sure the letter is in line of sight of Matt, so that eventually Matt's going to ask him, what is so important about that letter, because, you know, Tom can't go directly to Matt and say, okay, here's what this says, and
he has to wait till he asks.
Otherwise, it would bring disaster, and you know, in that respect, you know, Tom probably knows all sorts of little tricks to kind of get the topic around without ever mentioning it, so that, you know, Matt has to ask. So I guess that could definitely also be a reason for the amount we see the letter before, you know, other than just it being a tantalizing, you know, you as the reader knows that letter's from Moraine, but we're not going to let you see it until book 11.
Yeah, that's Trevian. Oh, yeah. Go batty with that. So, what do you think that Tom's role will be in the last battle? While the whole thing's going down, the big showdown.
Well, I definitely have to feel that he's gonna succeed in rescuing Moraine. I almost kind of see them arriving to the last battle just in the nick of time. Like, the battle is going completely terribly. Just amazingly horribly, because Moraine's not there to help Rand in whatever way she's supposed to help him that Min saw in her, in her viewing.
And Matt wouldn't be there either, because he'd be with
Exactly. them. And then, like, they show up and I kind of see it being Moraine, trying to get to Rand and Tom being there right at her back, almost like a warder, almost, if he isn't. And throw a little conjecture of my own in there.
Yeah, I was thinking that. That's funny.
It'd just be kind of one of those things. I don't know. I definitely kind of see him not being one of the big generals. I think that gets left up to Matt and Perrin and to some extent Rand and Loghain and, pretty much anybody else who could be a really major general. But I do see him, kind of being there and just knives flying everywhere and Trollocs going down and, being the wiry yet kind of spry, pseudo gleeman, pseudo assassin kind of man that he is, the Third Age's version of 007 or something.
That's funny. I kind of have a hard time envisioning what he's going to be doing during the last battle. Like, part of me thinks that maybe, like you say, they'll all get arrived together and he'll be kind of like watching Moraine's back and like she'll be doing her thing and he'll be flinging things at, knives, like you said, and at the people coming up, around her at all sides. But then part of me kind of has this feeling that he's going to sneak off and do something that we don't know about, because he always has this way about, like, getting information or something being done, and that it's something that we as the reader wouldn't know that we know he left to do something, but we don't know what it is, and then all of a sudden something will happen, and it's like, oh, that's what he was doing. I don't know what that would be, but that seems like a very Tom thing to do.
Yeah, being one of those things. He did have a good deal of rapport with Tuan and whatnot, and maybe since he's still with Matt, he'll kind of help Matt in coordinating the Shanshan presence at the last battle. I mean, it may be a little bit of a stretch, but Lord knows Tom has enough knowledge, on a political scale that he could very well easily end up being, like a king or a noble or an advisor to a throne, which, Matt now technically kind of has with his, Prince of Ravens title and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I do kind of think, or actually I don't think, I'm about 98% confident that Tom's going to survive. I think he's, once again, I hate, especially because, once again, he's in my top 15 characters. I don't know if I can limit them down to top 10 or top 5, but, he's definitely in probably my top 15 characters, and those characters, I have a really hard time condemning any of them to death, with the exception of Rand. Rand I can send off to the grave pretty easily, but that's because he has a prophecy that he's going to live again, so, I don't know, I just see him being too wiry for it. It's like the name Fox implies, or the Gray Fox implies, is he'll just kind of, he'll pop up when you least expect it. You may think he's dead, and then suddenly it's like, oh, hello, I am back.
Yeah. Well, that already happened once, right? So we already had thought Tom died. Well, even though I knew that he didn't, but not that, really, yeah. But, I kind of, it's just like a Gandalf thing, like, oh, he's not gone. But we are, we already did that where you think he's a god and then he comes back. And I just think that would, I don't know, it's kind of like cheating to kill him. I don't know. He has to survive, and I think that he's too smart, and not that smart, that it can't happen, but I picture him growing older and, actually maybe getting married and, like, settling down a little bit, but still not being too settled, still going off and having little adventures and things like that, but I don't see him, this being the end for him.
Yeah, I know, you bring up, the fact that we have already thought that Tom was dead, for quite a while in the early books. And when he shows back up, he's got that horrible limp from the Fade's blade, you know, attacking him and whatnot. And I don't know, that's always bothered me. The fact that even with Aes Sedai healing after the fact, he's never really fully recovered, you know, his former, you know, ability to, like, perform acrobatics and stuff. And, I don't know, do you think that there's a chance that at some point someone will come up with the knowledge to be able to fix it completely?
Well, they say why, because they waited too long to heal it before. Mm-hmm. Everybody said that, I know I say it all the time, but everybody said, oh, you can't heal stilling and you can't heal death. And I know, okay, death hasn't been done, but there's a lot of things they say can't be done. Mm-hmm. And you know, somebody finds a way. Maybe, I don't think he's ever had an Ashaman try. Maybe a man's channeling could do it. Maybe they could sense something there to fix that a woman's could not for some reason or another. You know, or maybe it's the distinctions in the way that they heal. You know, how they always talk about they heal differently and Nynaeve does things different and what's the good healer with the Ashaman
that's
always with Flynn. Yeah, and how he does things differently, and they're always asking, well, what did you do? Maybe it's the way they go about doing it. So sure, maybe there's some way after this is all said and done that when they actually have time to think about that kind of those kind of minor things, maybe.
Well, I kind of
there's some way around it.
I kind of it's weird. I have the competing theories, that maybe because they've said often enough that men were actually usually the better healers, which never seemed to make sense to a number of the Aes Sedai. But at the same time, one of Nynaeve's, you know, in her moments of frustration, when you see into her point of view, and that she's always, you know, talking about things, and on her lengthy list of things she plans to heal, including, you know, Lon's, interior devastation over losing Moraine as his Aes Sedai, and, you know, healing the wounds in Rand's side, Tom's leg is in there. And it's one of the things she's like, you know, and I would make sure that Tom could walk again, you know, like normal, just like old times and whatnot. And so I kind of wonder if Tom's going to be like the icing on the cake, or yet another feather for Nynaeve's hat, which kind of seems a little excessive. But at the same time, I don't think I'd mind too much, because Tom really gets down during the course of a number of the books, you know, because a lot of really bad things happen to the poor man, and, you know, he kind of rebounds a little bit, but he's not really ever back up to that point where he was when we first meet him, where he, you know, does a backflip up onto the little short wall and starts juggling and telling stories to the boys in the Two Rivers or whatnot. So, you know, I wonder about that a little bit.
Yeah, it would be neat. Maybe we'll get to see it happen. Maybe we won't. We could just fantasize that that's what happens.
One of the things that doesn't end up getting mentioned, but everybody can imagine actually happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, little things that we could discuss. So I'm sure there's going to be lots of little things that are going to be left open that we'll be able to talk about and theorize about.
That's true. Well, it's about time for us to wrap up this week's episode of The Fourth Age. But before we go, Blake sent us in a poem for everybody called The Chosen, and we'd like to go ahead and play that for you now.
Hi there. This is Blake Rogers calling from the University of Central Arkansas in Conway, Arkansas. I'd like to read a poem I have titled The Chosen. Companions move in time to seal the bore. The Chosen were there. The strife should end the war. Pinholes closing, Earls the end of an age. Heart's vain secret broke the world in all rage. The 13 were trapped. The world's glad to be ridden. Memory short now. Their stories for children. They're things, but are best not forgotten, for the seals have become weak and rotten. Beautiful and deadly, daughter of the night, she walks in dreams, causing more than just fright. A scholar of history was Evel, crossed o'er to the dark to become immortal. A musician by trade, not the most feared, but for harvesters' towns he had cleared. Almost the dragon, his scorn loosed therein. Of course, you'd die too, makes no matter to him. Before Camarile's descent, she was modest. Now sexuality is her method at best. Betrayer of hope, first consumed by dark, touching the world, getting souls to depart. Biologist before his fall into shadow, constructs he made, the dark one they follow. Watching from shadows, waiting for upper hand. Does the spider have you? Her webs are quite grand. The envious, a master general, no way to show his damage and turmoil. Doctor, who liked torture before her fall, doubt anyone wants her care now at all. Here's one who works with children. What a teacher. Turn their hearts black. Cities were their fodder. No one, not one for torture and convulsion, though he's quite the master of compulsion. Scar across his face, remembering his hate, longs to be the cause of the dragon's fate. Lanfear, Balthamel, Asmodine, Demodred, Grendel, Ishamael, Agenor, Mogideon, Belal, Semridge, Robin, Messana, Samael. 3,000 years in the seal they were frozen. Released once again, the 13 chosen. Thank you.
Thanks again to Blake for sending that in to us. That was great. If anybody else ever has anything that's Wheel of Time related and it's creative, send it in. We'd love to like even hear like some filks, you know. Make up your own song parody or filk to some music with Wheel of Time words and characters. I don't know, anything that's different. Could be poetry or anything like that. We'd love to play something like that.
Yeah, definitely. We're always looking for any sort of creative endeavors that people who love the Wheel of Time can send us in and whatnot. You could also send us email for feedback, theories, and other sorts of things at podcast@dragonmount.com or visit our website at www.dragonmount.com/podcast.
You could also leave us fan feedback on our forums, or you could leave us a voice message at 1-888-333-7690 or via audio on our MySpace page, and that's at www.myspace.com/4thAge.
So in our next episode, we will be examining the false dragon Loghain. Following that, we'll explore the Aiel and their varied and vast culture. And three shows from now, we will take a look at Min, our favorite viewer of the future. So go ahead, send us in your feedback. We'll wait to hear from you then. Until next time, everyone, may light shine on you and protect you always.
Thanks, everybody, for listening, and take care.
The Fourth Age podcast is brought to you by DragonMount.com. For advertising, please email advertising@DragonMount.com. The Fourth Age music is brought to us by Josh Needleman. You can visit his site at www.scriberocks.com.